very often you would hear parents saying, but I don't understand why you're saying there's a difference between everyday learning and school learning, because most of what I do at home with my kids is in fact school learning. It's exactly the same kind of thing as goes on in school. And my answer to that is that, well, that makes the point. Because the people who see that kind of thing and the people who practice those kinds of relationships are people who are so schooled that they've internalized those kind of things as part of their everyday ways of being.
I think what you're pointing to is whether that kind of mediation is possible in working class contexts, or is it limited to middle class, and therefore is school learning really important in the working class context? Otherwise they don't achieve the cultural capital gain that middle class people do. I think that in the real world, and because for various reasons, that is probably true in a lot of cases, where there are various factors that act against the ability of parents in homes, if we're talking here about homes, to mediate. And they include situations just like not having enough time, but also not being exposed to various kinds of frameworks so that they can help to reframe everyday experiences in a way that takes their children to a higher level of understanding the world and engaging with the world. However, having said that, I think it would be arrogant and incorrect, I think, from my own experience, to assume that it's not possible for that kind of development of frameworks and the ability to reframe to happen in working class contexts. I'm thinking particularly of political activists in the 80s who were thrown out of school for various reasons, who were exposed in various ways to theories of understanding change and the world because they were involved in a struggle that they wanted to overthrow the government, and were exposed to ways of understanding the world that actually reframed their own experiences and helped them to see their world differently and also helped to direct their actions in a particular way. And it was not in a school context, and it was not in a middle class context. So I think that while it might be correct in some instances to look at those distinctions, particularly to address inequalities in our society and particularly from an educational point of view, I think it's arrogant and dangerous to assume that these things can only happen in schools and can only happen in middle class contexts, because I think that also assumes that those things will happen in middle class contexts and that they will happen in schools. If schooling is there to prepare our young people to engage with the real world and all the demands of the real world, which demands literacy, not only reading, but information technology of quite a high level, and various abilities and competencies to engage in the world for survival, if nothing more than that, then yes, I think the school learning has a particular role that is different, or could be different. I don't think it should be assumed, but certainly is more that way orientated, and will happen more so in that case. But I do think that we have a history of many centuries that have shown that that kind of mediation and that kind of preparation of young people into the society can also happen and has happened outside of the school. But I think that the demands of our present environment are such that most families and in most non-formal contexts would not be able to do a lot of that. But I think some of that can happen. But I do think that is a major task of the school. And in that way, maybe one can make a distinction.
Yes, certainly it's another system. But you talk about the modern world. I mean, in this world that we live in now, it's an incredibly important way of knowing. Because of what, for example, is sometimes called globalization, breaking down of the boundaries of everyday life. The need to know the world from outside of and from more than just our own everyday understandings of it. And the argument, I think, and it's an argument that I certainly would push quite strongly, is that schooling, the process of learning through formalized systems of knowledge, is preeminently the way that we go about it. It's a must for learners in modern society. If we treat local knowledge, the knowledge of the everyday that each one of us have, then what we really do is curtail what I can know to things that are already in some way familiar to me. How can I relate it to the everyday knowledge of other people living in another place within South Africa, for example? I can only do that through stepping outside of my own knowing and coming to know, to understand other forms of knowing. That's really the danger that is being signaled. If you simply treat schooling as the repetition and the exercising of the local knowledges that we live within, you don't achieve the fundamental breakthrough that schooling achieves for learners, which is to give us this much broader, as you put, general way of understanding the world, general forms of thought that in principle can be used anywhere that we go throughout our lives.
I then asked Jill Adler and Maggie Tsule the same question. How are everyday knowledge and school knowledge different?
When you think about school knowledge, it should be, I believe, while applied and probably relevant to everyday life, it should be decontextualized. Because if it's too familiar to the students in terms of where they're coming from, the notion we spoke about earlier on of conflict then doesn't play a part. And therefore, students aren't able to change some of the misconceptions that they bring to schooling because you're not challenging them.
One thing that helps us see the difference is in something like shopping. Let's take decision making in shopping, why we buy certain things. A lot of times you decide on a brand, not because it's cheapest, but because you like it. Or you'll decide to buy a packet of 8 apples rather than 12 because there are 4 of you in the house and you only need 2 each this week, even though the 8 package might be a more cost-effective way of doing it. So the decisions that we make at home around purchasing are not motivated in the same way as we need to be motivated by mathematics. At a mathematical level, we would want to say, given these set of circumstances, how do we maximize them? So something like maximizing is a mathematical tool that we use to understand. So a company would use it, and they would use mathematical models, if you like, to say, how do we maximize profits? And that should be a model that would hold in all circumstances. Now, if we try to apply that to shopping, we can say, how do we get the maximum benefit of this 10 rand I'm going to spend? Okay, but the decisions we make when we buy are not the decisions that we make as a mathematician about how do we optimize. And I think that that's where we sometimes get into confusion. So we bring shopping in to try and help the kids understand, but the motivations are different. Mm-hmm. So what we need to do is to see the difference between those things and to help them move from what does maximizing mean in mathematics? How does it play out? How does it help us do our shopping? Because sometimes it does help us do our shopping. When doesn't it help us do our shopping? Those might be some of the things that one would think about as the difference.
You're talking about decontextualized knowledge. Now, how can decontextualized knowledge be relevant?
I think the word relevance brings problems because it's relevant for who and for what. You know, Jill is talking about shopping. It might not be relevant for me to buy whatever item, even though it might seem like I could go a long way with the 10 rand that I have. So if we're talking about relevance, then we're limiting students to where they are. And the idea of schooling is to take them further, to move their knowledge a little bit higher than where they are when they came in. And if you keep only to what's relevant to them, you're almost keeping them in the ghetto.
Can you give us an example of maybe how decontextualized knowledge, then that sort of, you know, taking people further, actually becomes quite useful?
Teacher tried a very interesting activity with learners. They were grade 7. What she had them do is bring in garbage from the environment. As she had anticipated, there would be different kinds of waste coming in. So they brought in a lot of fruit waste, paper, tin, plastic, and her motivation was to start doing some graphing work in the classroom. So they were able to see that there was more fruit waste, and they were able to have a discussion about what is it about this area that produces more fruit waste. And in that way, a very nice integrated approach, starting from the environment, using resources that are in the environment. And what became the difficulty was moving from that to graphing skills and interpreting the graph. Now, that's the decontextualized knowledge that one needs. What does a scale mean? How does one set up a scale? What does it mean when you expand the scale? What does it mean when you contract the scale? Now, given the time that she had and the time that it took, she never got onto those issues. At the end of the day, she had to draw the scale for them. She said, let's let the scale be 3-1 or 4-1. So that we can fit all the fruit in and also show the paper and the plastic and that. But there wasn't a focus of attention on What is a 3-to-1 scale? What is a 4-to-1 scale? What is a scale in general? How do we read a scale on a graph? What happens when we change the scale on a graph? So one needs the decontextualized notion of a scale so that one can read and interpret graphs correctly.
What would you have done? So you've got all this waste, they've collected this waste. How would you...
Well, what I would have done was, first of all, ask them to represent that pictorially. Themselves. Here we've got these piles on the floor. How are you going to explain to someone in a picture what we found out? And then to start to work from their representation into a mathematical representation. So that we can start to see that that's one of the things that mathematics gives us.